What the Tech is brought to you by Hover. Find a domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com/WTT and get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's hover.com/WTT. Hover, domain names for your ideas. TextExpander helps you communicate smarter. Visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Are you missing me?
Well, I'm, the way we left things is a little hazy at this point, Andrew. I had a
it was a night of debauchery. Stupidity.
Yeah,
night of debauchery. Can I list what you drank?
I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
No, it's because, okay.
So,
let's see if what you remember.
By the way, this is a tech podcast. Paul and I have been doing this for many years now, where we discuss all sorts of technology in a fun and open way. Sometimes we're critical. Sometimes we like stuff. I'm an enthusiast. Mm-hmm. Paul is an expert. He knows everything.
Okay.
And by the way, I do want to say this. So you were in New York on Tuesday. You, Mary Jo, and Brad had an event. The Health of Tech event at the Microsoft store on Fifth Avenue. I was there to just watch. I hung out. I helped out a little bit, but I was there to watch it, and it was a nice turnout. I got my Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley.
Told you how I feel about your mouth on my head.
I gave you a little kiss over there when I was there. I was very interested in the topic you guys were talking about. As something that I kind of follow up, and I listen to your podcast, and I also follow this, you know, to cover it. It was done in a very easy way to follow, and I thought it was very interesting. And you guys hit a number of topics. I have to tell you though, you and Brad are great. Mary Jo Foley was unbelievable.
Wow,
I have to tell you, she was my all star in this.
Interesting.
Yeah,
she was my all star in the middle.
That's why she's in
the
middle.
Nuggety center.
No, in all seriousness, you guys did a great event. Hopefully you guys are going to be doing a little bit more of these every now
hopefully.
And then.
I think so. That's sort of the rough idea, you know.
Every now and then you guys will do this. I had a great time going there. So Paul was in New York. Before we get into a bunch of stuff, which I want to talk about, Microsoft as a services company, because that kind of touched on what you guys were talking about. Windows as a service, Windows as a subscription, things like this. I kind of want to go into that because of the Apple announcement on Monday. But I do want to talk about what happened after the event. So we went to Rattle and Hum. Mary Jo, myself, Brad, your people from your company, from Theroux, people, viewers, followers, they all went. And I have a tally. I did the smart decision. I left when I realized how downhill things were headed. I headed for the hills.
I left way after I realized how downhill things
were headed. Oh, yes, you did. So my tally, and we could go into detail. Do you have a meeting today by any chance?
Yeah, we actually have some, unfortunately, big, there's a really big thing happening at work.
Well, we'll go through that. But my tally, and then we'll go into everything, was you started off with an espresso martini, okay, to start off the night. I convinced you that we should do Jameson shots. You proceeded to berate me and tell me who does Jameson shots. You drink Jameson. You don't do a shot. So that was that. You finished the martini, had ordered whiskey. We ended up doing tequila shots.
That's true.
And then you went proceeded back to whiskey. And I believe you did another espresso martini at one point. That was my tally. I counted maybe 4 tequila shots. 2 whiskey shots, 2 martinis, and a whole lot of whiskey. So how did you
all right,
feel?
So if I could clarify, because you missed out on one of the weirder things I drank that day, which was that double shot that had the pickle juice as the chaser.
Yeah. No, I was there for the pickle shot, the pickleback. Yeah.
No, but I don't think you listed that.
No, I did not list the pickleback shot, which I personally love pickleback shots. You thought it was terrible.
I thought it was a weird thing to do. I'm sure it was very cleansing and restorative.
You know, Paul, as someone that's 35 years old, can I just inform you? I think you should start acting your age.
I there is ample evidence to suggest that you might be onto something. I don't
know. No, but it was a lot of fun. We all had a lot of fun that night.
Yeah. You mostly drank rosé, right? I know you had a couple shots, but
yeah, I did.
You pretty much stuck to the rosé.
Yeah, because I was very concerned that my night would not end well. So my goal was to escape and be home by 10.
Yeah.
Because I had
Brad married Joe and some of the other folks that I work with, not all of them, at various times, you know, exited gracefully.
Yeah. 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 No, I did not. But by the way, I did not exited that bar gracefully. I ended up going to another bar when I got back to my town, and I drank with the bartender till about 12:30.
So I was out till 1:30. I ended up somewhere, and I don't know what the neighborhood's called, but in the southern part of Manhattan, in an area I do not recognize.
You were downtown.
At a Korean karaoke bar.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just going to end the story there. No, I did not sing. No.
Some Bruce Springsteen? I don't know. Today's opening day.
Today's opening day. Yeah.
Today's opening day. I'm wearing my Mets shirt today. You know, hopefully we'll win 80 games this year. That's my goal. Paul will probably have a better season as a Red Sox fan.
Listen, I'm going to say the same thing that I say to you every year. I appreciate the Mets fanaticism you got just on display there, that bizarrely religious symbol on your chest. But if I'm not mistaken, at the end of the day today, the Mets will have been statistically eliminated from the playoffs.
Listen, man, we won 10 games in a row last year. We were the best team in baseball. The greatest start ever for franchise history. Anyway, we do have a lot to talk about today. Apple had an event on Monday, so I do want to talk about that. I do want to touch on some of the topics you, Mary Jo, and Brad discussed at the event, because I was really focused in on what you guys were talking about. I really enjoyed the whole conversation, obviously, and a whole lot more. But before we continue, I want to thank our great sponsor, and that's Hover. Buy your domain names at Hover. I own over 200 domain names at this point, and I continue to buy domain names. I buy it for relatives. I buy it, you know, when kids are born, I always register their names. I think it's a nice gift to give somebody. But in all seriousness, I protect my assets, my shows, my products that I have, my businesses, by buying the domain name and securing it before somebody else gets it. Or an idea, for example. I have a bunch of domain names that I've actually sold. Not for a lot of money, but I've actually sold these domain names. So I kind of hoard these domain names, and it's like a thing that I do. But if you have a business and you're purchasing, you know, you want to get it going, this is the first thing to do. And I know how confusing this could be. A lot of times people buy domain names and they're thinking they're spending, you know, X amount of dollars on this. And then all of a sudden they're checking out a $50, $60 for one domain name when they thought it was going to be one price, because they hit you with all these extras at the end of the day. Hover doesn't do that. Very simple, very easy. You go to hover.com/WTT. That's hover.com/WTT. You get 10% off your first purchase of your domain name, and you check out. Private registration is included. If you want to add an email address to that, you can. If you're a business, Paul, before we started doing these Hover reads, Paul's email address was cutiepaul@gmail.com. Nobody's going to take him serious with that email address. That's why you got the paul@therot.com. And now, you know, now he's a pro. People take him serious. It's not, you know, mine was queensexyangel at AOL.com. Nobody took me serious until I got my Hover domain name. By the way, that was a real email address for somebody that I knew. That was her screen name. Actually, it was Boricua Princess 94. That was her screen name. And I always say, you know what? She might have been taken seriously if she had a dedicated business domain, you know, to our website. Hover.com/WTT. Get 10% off your first purchase. I want to thank Hover for supporting the show. Paul, did you ever have a ridiculous screen name?
No, not for anything outside of like like video games or something.
Van
like
Halen Love 93. No?
No, I never did that.
Okay. I've had some embarrassing ones, but I'm a lot younger than you, so I'm allowed that. I grew up in the...
Well, I was young once, Andrew, right?
Yeah, but you didn't have screen names and, you know, go into chat rooms and try to pick up babes. Didn't happen in your lifetime.
No, that's true. I'll just leave it at that. You're right.
Right. Let's. I do want to talk about the Apple event really quickly. Yep. Oprah Winfrey showed up.
Yeah. Who cares?
Excuse me?
If you strip away all the celebrity nonsense and you kind of boil it down to bare facts, I mean, honestly, the most striking thing to me up front was how little of the services are going to be available anytime soon to anybody.
Yeah.
You know? It kind of begs the question why they did it now.
Well, that's a great question. Why do you think so? Why do you think they did it now?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's a little bit like the Google Stadia announcement from a week ago. Like, well, why do it now? You don't have anything to show. There's nothing ready.
So there were
You're just talking about ideas.
A couple parts. So you had the Apple TV Plus subscription, which is their TV service.
Right.
I don't know what's going on here with these shots. Sorry about that. The Apple, it's expected this fall. There's no word on availability by country yet. But the new Apple TV, Apple TV app is required and should be available on iOS and tvOS this May. Apple TV this fall, Samsung Smart TV this spring, which is a very interesting piece of this, and other smart TV and set-top boxes, and vaguely they mentioned in the future. So this is their TV service. They're going to have original programming, right? We got word of that. Beyond that,
Andrew, do you understand? Like, seriously, if they're going to put an Apple TV app on Roku, which I believe they are, I will never have to use an Apple TV again. How wonderful is that?
Well, but here's a question for you, Paul. If they put an Apple TV app on Roku, what are you accessing?
iTunes movie content.
Okay, are you accessing their app library by any chance? Their game library? I mean, not that it exists, but I mean,
It's the Apple TV. Oh, I see what you're saying. So what I assume it is the TV app that you get on iOS.
So that is, I feel like if Apple had a way stronger experience as far as applications go, things that you can't get on a Roku or on a Fire TV, this wouldn't be as detrimental to purchasing an Apple set-top box.
Well, here's an idea. I mean, so you wanted to kind of talk about the move to services at both Microsoft and Apple, you know, over the course of the show. But here's something to think about. And it's funny because you kind of putting it that way in the beginning was kind of making my mind race a little bit. And then you just said, what does it mean when you move this app over to Roku? Does it mean the whole, in other words, could they virtualize the entire Apple TV as software? Or do you mean just the TV app, right? So I had never really thought about that, but I believe it's just the TV app, which is fine. You know, Apple is kind of unique in the world in that they actually make hardware with high margins, right? So when they sell an iPhone for $1,000, it only costs them $300 or $400 to make, or maybe even less. They're selling that thing at an enormous profit, but that's not typically the case. And I wouldn't be surprised to discover if something like the Apple TV hardware was really not a profitable business for them. Like, this is something like, why bother, you know? And so the move to services where their app is on everywhere, so you can get it on your TV, you can get it on your competing set-top box, you can get it wherever, is really smart for them in this case, because they're talking about content and it doesn't really harm the rest of their business. You know, they should put it on the web. They should make it on Windows, you know?
Yeah.
Putting it on the web would make it on Windows, you know? They can't afford to do this with the iPhone because it's such a huge, significant part of their overall revenues, but the Apple TV is nothing, you know? So actually moving that app around makes tons of sense. It's a good move.
So do we, beyond the content that they announce, I mean, how is this going to work? Do you really want to see Steve Carell and,
there is nothing that they're going to make that interests me in the slightest. Here's the thing. So first of all, it's not going to be mostly that, right? It's going to be this combination of other services. The one thing that they will do that could be useful is by aggregating whatever services they'd get, you know, into a single user interface, right? And you know, you use the, I think you still use the Amazon Fire TV. If people use Roku, you can see a really vague version of this. where you can search from outside of the apps and try to find content, and it will tell you where it is, right? And so you're like, this Clint Eastwood movie has to be somewhere. Like, where can I get it? And it will tell you where you can get it, right? But what the Apple thing will do is, allegedly, you know, is show you the content across the services. You'll have a single interface, and you'll be able to find things from one place. And there is a value to that, you know. The problem is it's never going to be complete. And so you're not going to find the Netflix stuff there. You're going to have to go launch the Netflix app separately. And that will always be the case. There's always going to be these outliers. They're not even outliers. It's probably the majority of them. But there's always going to be this other stuff that exists outside of Apple channels or whatever they're calling that.
So, in our chat, Isabella brought up a great point when we were talking about, you know, who's this targeting? You know, who was this supposed to be for, this event? She brought up a great point. She goes, I think this event was aiming towards investors and stockholders and Wall Street more than anything else. It wasn't the consumer because they didn't talk. Yeah. They didn't release anything. I think that's a brilliant point, and I agree with that 100%. They wanted to show off that we're doing something.
Yeah. I guess the question I had was like, why though? Like, why now? Like, what was it about late March that this made sense? So it might have been tied to the fact that one of the services was ready, which is News Plus, which is the arguably the least interesting of these services by far. It is nothing like what people thought it was. It's News Plus magazines is what it really is. So news, the news app gives you news. They aggregate news. There were all these rumors like, oh, you're going to be able to get the Wall Street Journal as part of this. Wall Street Journal is very expensive, by the way.
Very.
You're not getting the Wall Street Journal. You're getting a hand-selected couple of articles here and there.
You're getting Rodent Track magazine.
Yeah, but you know,
Popular
you know
Science.
But as a mental exercise, by the way, go into this thing and try to get Rodent Track magazine. Try to do it. See what that looks like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the other thing, you know, people, I don't understand this mentality. You know, not, $10 a month isn't that bad. And if you do subscribe to a number of those magazines digitally already, yeah, maybe it will save you money. Certainly there's extra content in it. You really have to hunt and find it though. You don't subscribe and automatically get it. It doesn't go into your library. It's really hard to get this stuff. But okay, fine. But the truth is, like, you know, one of the things that I've discovered over the past couple of years is if you subscribe to magazines digitally through something like Kindle, they cost like nothing. You know, Road and Track or Car and Driver is the one I think I subscribed to. It's like $10 a year. It's nothing. I just got wired for under $10 a year. So $10 a month, that may sound like it's a good deal. And maybe it is if you read a ton of magazines.
You subscribe to Wired things, digital or physical copy?
Digital. It was the same price. I don't want physical anything. So yeah, it was nothing. And they keep sending me offers in the mail, whatever. But this is what you'll find. Like, these magazines are actually very inexpensive to subscribe to already. So how many magazines would I have to subscribe to before, you know, News Plus started to make sense? 12? I don't subscribe to 12 magazines. It's actually cheaper for me just to subscribe to the ones I want, if that's what I want to do. And the other thing, you know, people maybe don't understand is like this whole interactive magazine nonsense that they tried to sell us on when the iPad first came out never makes any sense. It never makes any sense. And yeah, there might be a couple of really beautiful layout, you know, design news or magazine apps or whatever. But for the most part, what you're getting is a PDF. And you're just flipping page to page. You get a pinch to zoom to read it. You don't get any nice reading view or anything like that. That's something the Apple TV, the Apple News app really lacks. It's actually not that great. And so that's the one that's out. That one was ready. Mm-hmm. And if you actually look at it, if you actually use it, it's kind of disappointing.
Interesting.
And it makes me wonder about these other services, especially the game one, right? Where it's incredibly vague what they're going to do.
Yeah. So let me just go down the list really quick before we get, because I know that we're going to spend some time on that. And I do want to get to Microsoft because I thought what you guys were talking about was so good.
Yeah.
Paul, I really want to talk about services and Azure.
Who
and
doesn't?
Delivery.
Who doesn't?
I really want to talk about this. So the Apple TV stuff we talked about, the news app is what we're talking about. It's available now, but only on iOS 12.2 and Mac OS 10.14.4. Too many numbers there. And it's in the US and Canada. So you can essentially subscribe to all these new services, $9 a month, over 300 magazines from what I believe they said. I'm going to tell you something. $9 a month, $10 a month, that's an for me right now, that's high because I'm I have so many subscriptions. But like you said, if you already do subscribe to a bunch of magazines, you and you want a digital copy, this may be something that you're interested in. But all that information, you know, like if I'm subscribed, like my father's a car guy, right? He was a mechanic. He was an engineer. He was very much involved in manufacturing and stuff like that. He loves popular science and popular mechanics. And I mean, these are magazines he read years ago. Right. I can't get him to sit there on an iPad and read these things. If you're reading digital forms of this, you're probably going on a website or an RSS and you're reading it that way and you're getting the information in real time that way. If you still want to subscribe to a magazine service, I do think there's a tremendous amount of people that still want a physical copy. I don't think this is going to attract the physical copy holders to pay $10 a month. I do, however, think if you have a bunch of digital services, and I don't know what percentage of people read news that way, I guess, right? Like I subscribe to the New York Times. I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. I'm not going to get that experience on this app.
Right. Well,
a full
I don't know.
You know, full
fledged. The New York Times is not involved. But before this, before this Plus service came out, the news app allows you to subscribe, sign in to certain services. So, like for example, the Washington Post had some kind of a super cheap deal through the middle of the year, and I did subscribe to it. I never actually read the paper. So, but because I signed into it from the Apple News app, when I go to the Apple News app, there's actually like a Washington Post section and it comes up into my main feed and you can, you know, you can access paid subscription content there or whatever. So it's kind of outside of the Apple News Plus thing, but it's kind of interesting what you can do.
Yeah. So the next thing I want to talk about is the game service, which was very vague. They called it Apple Arcade. They made a point to say that this is not a streaming service and that you can play offline. It's available this summer, but for qualified customers, it's expected fall 2019. I skipped a line here. Over 150 countries, iOS, macOS, and tvOS. Do we have about this? Like, I know that they showed a demo, but
these guys... They did this crazy video where they kind of interviewed some of the people who are excited to be part of the service, you know, without telling us what any of the games are, what it's going to cost, or where you're going to be able to get it. And then they were like, you know, finally developers have the freedom to develop the games that they want, as if there were some bizarre lock preventing them from creating games, you know, that only run on one platform. Anyone as an individual can install Xcode on their Mac and create a game and put it in the iOS store. It's... You know, there's no one's preventing you from getting your game out there.
I don't understand this.
I know. I don't either. And I'm sorry. This is the same thing I'll say with Google, you know, with Stadia, which is, why would you lock yourself to this one platform? This is crazy. It's like the promise of the App Store was that we're going to take your app or game and we're going to put it in front of millions and then maybe billions of people. But the problem is, as it gets really big, your app gets kind of lost in the mix. And so the benefit of being on iOS is like, well, it's harder. Whether you're EA or Bob Smith, the independent developer, how do you get this thing in front of eyeballs? So now they're doing like a Plus version of it. It's like, okay. Now we have a special app store just for subscribers. And you're not going to be competing with thousands or millions or whatever it is of developers. Now you're only going to be competing with like a handful of them. Yeah. And the chances of you getting your wares in front of people is awesome again. And I'm sorry, but you can only read Jumpstart the same magic so many times.
Like, wait a minute, don't they do that already? No, they do that already. They curate their featured and editor picks.
No, they what they're saying now is it's a guarantee. In other words, because this thing will be so small, it will be like the App Store was back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, when there were only 150 apps in the store, your chance of getting that in front of eyeballs was really good.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Today you're kind of screwed unless you get lucky, you know.
This is okay. What platform is the prime focus for this?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You said that. So I originally thought it was iOS only, but then I was today in preparation for an article I was writing, I started going through the fine print and their little announcements. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, this thing is iOS, macOS, and tvOS.
Yes.
That tells us something very interesting, that the work, it's what it means to me is it's really iOS. Okay. The base of it is iOS. And they're going to use the technology that they use to bring apps to the Mac App Store from iOS to do this, and that they're also doing it for tvOS. I think that's what I think this is. That it, or they will have some way through, like we'll find out. Remember, developer shows in June. They'll have to divulge what the deal is, or there'll be some kind of a new universal binary for games, whatever they call it, that you can write to that will target all three of those operating systems.
Well, I'm going to show you something. tvOS is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. This tvOS was supposed to have a tremendous expansion upon gaming, and they could have done it, right? Because there are a handful of games on tvOS that are not bad that I've played.
You know what?
And well, it's converted what, well.
And this solves.
Okay. This is all you need.
But this solves a problem. The problem with the Apple TV gaming platform before was that it was a standalone thing. And so this is the same issue we're talking about for Stadia that we've been talking about for this arcade thing, which is why on earth would you as a developer limit yourself to this one platform or do the work to port something you already made for some other platforms to yet another platform? Like Apple TV is a relatively small platform. But it's a way smaller platform when you realize that only some tiny percentage of Apple TV users are ever going to buy that controller that you were just showing and actually think about playing games on this system. It's a tiny, tiny platform. So how do you fix that? You do something like Arcade, where you can create a game, hopefully. I'm guessing here, because if it's not this efficient, it's even stupider than I think. Mm-hmm. If you can easily make a game in Xcode that will write itself out to the three platforms and have that be kind of seamless, now you're taking much less of a risk. We're still talking about two fairly minor platforms from the perspective of a game maker, macOS and tvOS. But now it becomes like, it's just like, hopefully it's just a checkbox. You know, it's like, yeah, just make this work on that platform too. If it is that simple, it will start to make sense, at least from a developer standpoint. But we don't have any, I'm just making stuff up. We don't know. They never said. It was so vague.
Very vague. The whole thing was vague. I mean, the whole, by the way, the Mets are up 1-0 right now against the Nats.
Okay, Andrew, seriously, I cannot impress upon you the importance of not getting overly excited at the beginning of the season.
there was not much information here. I'm trying to open up my notes again and it crashed here. What else do we have from this event? We also, the Apple Card. Let's talk about the Apple Card.
So I actually think the Apple Card is going to be very successful. However, as we recently discussed, having spent a year acquiring credit cards, I can tell you that there is nothing special about the Apple Card. Nothing. Other than the fact that you maybe are so closely associated with the Apple brand that you need everything Apple does, and you spend enough at Apple where the 3x, you know, points on Apple purchases are meaningful to you. But here's the thing. Those points are lousy compared to what's out in the world. The notion of no-fee credit cards is not new. There are plenty of those. If you have really good credit, you can get low interest rate. You can get there's all kinds of great deals out in the world. This protection thing where you automatically, you know, don't give them your number, it obfuscates it, also available. But, you know, if you're an iPhone guy, there's no reason not to get it. It's not like you're getting yet another service. Like if you decide to get Apple TV Plus, whatever that costs, you're probably doing it in addition to other stuff. So you're adding to your monthly cost or whatever. It's not going to cost you anything to get an Apple Card. Like you can have multiple credit cards. Like it's okay. You know, it's not going to be a problem. And I do like some of the stuff they're doing around spending habits and advice and you know, things like that. I think they're going to be smart about that. They can take what they learned about the health stuff with Apple Watch and the health app that they have and apply it to finances. And I think that's totally cool. But don't be snowed under by any of this stuff. Don't think that this is anything special. It's not. There are way better deals to be had with regards to points and cash back and blah, blah, whatever.
So what does this mean for Apple Pay with the Apple Card?
Well, so not much. I mean, Apple Card will be just another card you can use with Apple Pay, right?
Yeah.
I expect over time that a lot of the financial information they're providing through the card will be applicable to other credit cards. I expect to see them do deals with particular credit card systems, whatever. There are some nice things about it. I mean, I do my finances every month, and I mean, my, sorry, my work expenses. And one of the things that's actually really difficult is you can't tell who the merchant is because it's so, comes out of a system and it's got all cap letters and it doesn't match the receipt you have. And you're trying to figure out what's what. They're promising to simplify, make that more plain English. And that's something that should have happened a long time ago. I mean, that's
PayPal does that. Yeah. So yeah. I'm a big fan of PayPal because of that. So I, like obviously I have a business card, but my day-to-day business stuff that I do, I tend to kind of gravitate towards PayPal because at the end of the year for like my, my BS expenses, but at the end of the year when I need to provide this or end of the quarter, when I provide this to my accountant, it actually breaks down into detail everything that I've done based on merchant and in and out. And I mean, it's a very detailed thing that my bank, even at Chase, they kind of struggle to do. So I think if Apple does this, it may be an advantage for that kind of stuff. I do think this is going to drive people to accept. So here's my question. If you have, if you don't accept Apple Pay at a, at a merchant, can you accept Apple Card?
Well, so that's, they're going to give you a, well, they're going to give you a card too. So it's kind of a weird system. It makes sense for you to use the version on your phone if you can, because you get much better value out of the points and all that. If you, if they don't accept Apple Pay through your phone, you they have a card you can use like a credit card, but you get like 1x points instead of whatever they offer elsewhere. So it's, they don't want you to use the card. They want you to use the electronic system. By the way, the no fee thing is hilarious because there's a fee on every credit card transaction. Apple's still getting a fee.
Not from you. They're getting it from them. From
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's still happening. So like, don't, like, you know, they present this like they're giving you a gift, you know. There are a lot of no fee credit cards.
It's a MasterCard, essentially. It's backed by MasterCard.
Okay, that, which is fine. It's fine. I think it's smart, and I think it's cool. I think it's, a lot of young people can, in particular, can use. I'm sure the advice they'll give will be good, and I think that stuff is great. Managing finances is an important skill that they need to teach in, you know, junior high school or whatever. This will be good for people. I think it's a good idea.
I think so too. I'm fine with this. I have no problem with this. So overall, this was a dud of an event.
I give it a dud.
I give it a dud. The Apple News stuff, fine. That's a real product that we have right now. We don't know what's happening with Apple Arcade because it was just bizarre video promos.
I think Apple News Plus is terrible and won't benefit most people.
I'm a little different than you on that. I'm a little different about that, but I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play it. I actually need to sign up and kind of play around with it.
I've been using it. I don't see the. I just don't see the value. Okay. But the Apple Arcade thing is so vague. No one could have an intelligent commentary on it right now. It makes, I have no idea what the freaking point of this thing is. Look, we've all been looking forward to an Apple video. Well, in the Apple Card thing we already discussed, I think it's fine. It's, don't replace all of your credit, because Brad would say, well, what credit card do I replace with it? Like, you don't replace a card. It becomes another card. It's fine. It is nothing wrong with it. You won't have a credit card that's so crappy that replacing it with Apple Card will make sense, but it's okay. I was just going to say, the big question mark, really, the meaningful question mark, because there are big question marks around the game thing, is the video service. And it's impossible to say if this is going to make any sense. We don't know what it's going to cost. We don't know what you're going to get for that cost. We don't know how well it's going to work compared to other services. We don't know what the content that will be unique to the service will be like and how it will compare to what we can get on HBO or Netflix or Hulu or whatever. Which is what I mean. It's bizarre that they announced it. There was nothing concrete there at all. Do we seriously need another stage where famous people from Hollywood can come to slap each other on the back and congratulate each other for being so awesome? What is going on?
Well, here's what's going on, okay? And one of my friends, he's a very brilliant marketer. I mean, he's a VP at a major marketing firm here in New York. And we were talking about this, actually, not Apple in general, but having tech companies kind of merge with mainstream marketing with product. You know, they did that with the ambassadorship. Remember that? Brand ambassadors. It became a huge thing a couple of years ago. Alicia Keys was a brand ambassador. Will.i.am was a brand ambassador. This is, again, it is a bunch of he used a term, and I don't want to say it on the show because it was very inappropriate, but it's a bunch of people sitting, getting on stage and just congratulating each other.
Circle jerk is what you're looking for, Andrew. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
He said it in an even cruder way. But
okay, but you understand that these are people who like to do nothing more than celebrate themselves again and again and again. How many award shows do we have? I guarantee you Apple will have an award show. Like, we get it. Rich, famous celebrities like Apple products. Like, we get it. You know, but do they enrich our lives in any meaningful way?
Well, that's the question. Well, that's the question, right? That's not to you and I. But
to the population in general. I know people are fascinated by celebrity. What I mean is like actual meaningful, you know, life-changing something.
I'm going to tell you, the moment that I, watching this, there was a moment that mm-hmm. I said, oh my God, Apple's like every other company, every other corporation at this point.
Yeah.
They've lost such sight.
Did Oprah fly out in a cape like a superhero?
That's what I'm getting to. I want to say this before I go into this. I'm an Apple user. I use a MacBook every day. I also use Windows mm-hmm. every day. I love my HP laptop, but I feel more comfortable using an Apple product. I like their operating system better. I use my mm-hmm. iPhone. I have Android as well. I'm in the UI. I'm not an Apple basher, but I was not surprised, but I said, oh my God, now it's so blatant that they're like everybody else. Sirius Satellite Radio, years ago, when Howard Stern mm-hmm. went over, they used him. I mean, he was a stock pump, you know, essentially. But they paid all this money to Howard. But they also paid all this money to Oprah to have our own Oprah channel, right? With Gail King and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Oprah cost them tons of money. Brought in a fraction of what her cost was, and it was just to gloat. It was more of a stock thing to investors to say, look, we have Oprah here. We're more valuable. Yeah. We have Oprah. We have Howard. And Oprah did nothing for them. Her TV channel was a failure. Her channel on Sirius was a failure as far as bringing in subscriptions because they thought it would bring mm-hmm. in subscriptions. And now Apple has fallen for that same celebrity bullshit that we see all these companies do.
They have no experience with this stuff. That's
wild.
This is the original discussion around this thing. Why on earth would anyone trust Apple to make TV shows? I mean,
first of all, we saw what they were talking about with the shows, right?
Yeah.
Is that appealing?
Just reverse it. Netflix announces tomorrow they're going to start making their own smartphone platform.
Yeah.
What? That would be met with a blank stare. Like, I don't understand why? What does that have to do with you? Nothing. Right. Yeah. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, they want to get into it. They think they can make a difference. And then what is Oprah's show? Can we discuss what it is?
I don't know.
What was it? Things that affect people and diversity and challenges and okay.
Finally,
bye.
Someone is addressing these issues of our age.
I've been. You know what, Paul? Yeah. I look at the world every day. I get out and I read the newspaper and I say, God, I wish there was somebody out there. I wish Oprah would come back and show me challenges that people face.
Mm-hmm. I know. Feel good stories about people overcoming challenges. You know, we don't have enough of that.
Maybe it's going to be great, but as far as Apple goes,
they should have a channel that's just kitten videos. You know,
is this going to sell more?
Wiggling his butt, and he makes the jump from the bed, and he makes it.
Is this going to sell more iPhones? That's at the end of the day.
So interesting. All right, but I think that's an interesting point. I think this gets the original point of the show. Which was this thing, why are Microsoft and Apple getting into services? I don't actually think it's about selling more iPhones, right? In other words, if all other things being equal, if Apple was going to magically sell the same number of iPhones every year, if they added this service, would they sell more iPhones? I think the answer is no. But I do think it is designed to keep their current audience engaged and keep them from going elsewhere. And this sounds a little, I don't mean this to be as critical as it's going to sound, but one of the ways you do that is you lock them in. which is a classic Apple strategy.
Yeah.
The more tendrils that Apple has into your life, the less likely you are when Samsung or Huawei or whoever announces some crazy, innovative, awesome folding something, something that Apple's not doing. It becomes more than inconvenient. It becomes almost impossible for you to separate yourself from the Apple ecosystem to even think about getting that device. And I think that's really the point.
That's a great point.
Or a major point. Tied to that, of course, is the money aspect of it, because the truth is Apple's iPhone sales are not going to go up. They're going to go down. And there may be little ups and downs. We'll never hear about them. It doesn't really matter. But they've done as much as they can to maximize the revenues and profits by raising the average selling price of the device. And I'm sure there's some intricate math involved where you know, everyone like us complains about the price, but Apple knows this is exactly where we want to be. It's good. And eventually you have to make it up, and you have to make it up elsewhere. They do have whatever the real figure is of actual users, a billion, 1.4 billion, whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. They have a really large and, more important, really engaged user base. And there are interim steps you can take, like the iPhone upgrade program, where you never stop paying Apple for an iPhone. You just keep paying and paying and paying. And what you get is the benefit of a new iPhone every year if you want it, which a lot of people do want. Now, a lot of people don't want that. So how do you get that money every month? Well, you tax services on. And this is the basics, you know, iCloud, you know, cloud backup. We talked about that. There's even things like AppleCare you might want to throw into that list, Apple Music if you want. And now we're expanding out into other stuff. And so I don't know if they'll ever do a bundle that's everything, like the all-in Apple thing, which I think a lot of people would, you know, spooge over. But I think for a good part of that engaged user base, there's some percentage of these services where it's like, okay, yes. You know, the type of person who would choose Apple Music, sight unseen, which is what a lot of people did, would choose Apple TV Plus. Hmm. You know, they're the type of people that do have an Apple TV.
Yeah.
It's probably a pretty good market, you know? Yeah, they know what it is. Yeah. They know what it is.
I do want to take a moment before we go to the Microsoft stuff, which I was more interested in, but we ended up talking about this for a while.
Yeah, well,
The Apple thing. I do want to talk about our great sponsor, and that's Text Expander. Paul, do you use Text Expander? Because I use it all the time.
No, it's funny you say that. I am aware of it. It's something I do think about.
Okay. I've been using them for a while now because I absolutely love the fact that I could summarize, essentially have hotkeys for all my stuff that I'm doing, like messages and stuff like that. Like I do a weekly What the Tech is Live. I just have to hit WTT and then it just fills it all out for me, which is great. Same thing with contacts, same thing with emails. It makes my life so much easier. And it'll make your life easier too. If you go to textexpander.com/podcast, that's textexpander.com/podcast, you get 20% off your first year subscription, which is phenomenal. I love these guys. They do a great product, and I want to thank them for supporting the show. Let's talk about Microsoft really quickly, Paul. I know we don't have a lot of time, but maybe we can milk a minute or two after this. You, Mary Jo, and Brad were talking about during your hot event, the Health of Tech. It went into a interesting conversation, and I kind of wanted to touch on it. I think Brad brought it up, or you brought it up. Windows as a service, right? Windows as a subscription. And I tried to ask the question to kind of start getting people to go up there and ask questions. But this is what I was thinking when I brought up the fact that how are you going to condition anybody to right now? Because remember, Windows 10 has been around for a while and it's just there and it's updated and it's the latest. Right. People don't even realize that there's a fall update and a spring update at this point. They don't realize that. Before there were numbers, and there was Windows 7 and 8, and no 9, but there was Windows 10. So, like, you've always had some sort of marketing that pushed, okay, this is the new one, go get this. Mm-hmm. Even though people don't buy Windows, they buy a new computer or they buy a new laptop. Yeah, yeah. So now we are in this weird period where Windows is Windows, right? Windows updates. Everybody gets the update. If you have Windows 10, it doesn't matter. You get the update, and it's there, and it's on your computer. And you don't have to think about this.
Right.
Now, if we consider Windows as a subscription or a service, let's call it whatever it is, right? Windows 11. You're now going to tell people, hey, if you want to continue constantly getting the latest and greatest, pay us money per month. And I know that this would probably be rolled into some other service. It wouldn't just be for Windows. But it's a weird jump.
I don't see that happening. I mean, but yeah, the problem for Microsoft is similar to the problem for Apple, right? Which is that people are buying the device less frequently. So they're getting that injection of revenue less frequently. But they've also agreed to kind of support this thing for this Windows as a service, which is going to support it forever, you know. So how do you maintain that model in a market where the users are a lot less engaged than they are on phones?
Absolutely.
Right? Where I said, you know, I said the iPhone upgrade program makes tons of sense because people want a new iPhone, you know. They'll pay $30-$40 a month to get a new iPhone. It's, you know, and always have the latest iPhone. I mean, people like that. That's fine. But increasingly for a lot of people, it's like, no, you know, actually I can hold on to my iPhone for 4 or 5 years. So how do you monetize those guys? And that you do it through these services. And so it's actually worse on the Windows side, especially with consumers, because they've already moved businesses to a subscription model. That's how the biggest businesses that do business with Microsoft acquire Windows. It's a volume licensing. It's a subscription. And when you look at the upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10, they don't want to. Microsoft doesn't want you to do that. They want you to upgrade from Windows 7 to Microsoft 365, which is Windows 10 plus Office 365 plus some management stuff at a higher monthly cost. Because if you just go from one version of Windows to the next, your payment to Microsoft never changes, right? And so they're trying to make that go up. And you know, again, the goal is the same, to monetize this stuff on a monthly basis and have it be more lucrative for them. And so on the consumer side, it's a little unclear what how they intend to do that with Microsoft 365. I don't think it's going to be tied to updates. I don't think they're ever going to say to people, hey, if you don't pay for Windows, Microsoft 365, you're not going to get updates. Listen, nobody wants updates.
I get that. Where I'm going is, I don't think it's going to be the traditional Windows as we know it. That's going to be a consumer subscription service for updates. I think it's going to be a service like Windows Lite or Windows on the cloud that becomes your subscription service. So depending on what device, doesn't matter what device you're on, you have an updated version of Windows somewhere on the cloud. So your hardware doesn't really matter. It's your access to this service that matters. So, okay.
I mean, I don't.
Okay, you know, if you think about it, you really, because you guys were talking about, you know, what the future of Windows Lite would be. And I know that's not going to be the name. And Brad touched on, you know, this is going to be possibly a cloud-based system. You know, they have the back end to virtualize this. They could do something like this where they just virtualize Windows as a subscription.
I don't know, though. How do you get people to pay for something like this? I mean, we are conditioned in this space, you know. The uptick of something like Office 365, we're used to buy Office, you know, you got it with your new computer essentially for free, you thought. Now you're paying for it every year. A lot of people kind of aren't super interested in that. And so there has to be value there. I happen to think Office 365 is sort of a no-brainer because you get 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage. That needs to go up now, by the way. But, you know, how do you, I don't know. You know, it's a tricky one.
I guess if you virtualize Windows, so you know, you brought up gaming, you know, with Xbox and streaming gaming. What if you just virtualize all of Windows and that becomes part of it? Everything you need to do. So not just with gaming, let's say you need to do Photoshop. Let's say you need to use Adobe After Effects or Adobe Premiere. And you don't have the horsepower to do this. You could just virtualize it on the cloud, pay a subscription of, you know, $8, $9 a month or whatever it is. And this is for heavy duty horsepower stuff.
Yeah, I certainly the future of computing is lighter and simpler and more mobile. And, you know, you can see that trend today. Most people use the phone most of the time. Sometimes they use a computer or a computer-like device when they have to type out something long. Like I write for a living, so I'm on that side of it a lot. But most people don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting on the writing side. But every once in a while you do. And yeah, so could that thing be tied to you want to access, you know, full-blown Word now for a little while. You could pay a little microtransaction fee or something. It's certainly possible. But, you know, the trick for Microsoft is going to be the same as the trick for Apple. How do we take these users who, you know, not have been freeloading, but have not been paying? And how do we, you know, incite them to pay? And it needs to be a win-win situation. I like Office 365 as a good example because the people who need that software, it's a really good deal. It actually is a really good deal.
You pay a couple, but instead of paying $1,000 or whatever.
Yeah,
or
whatever.
Five, whatever, probably $500.
Yeah, and they update the crap out of it. It's kind of astonishing how frequently that thing updates. And it really gets, you know, like materially better. It really is good. You know, but you know, how do we do that with Windows? It's a good question. Or even if, you know, do we, for most people, you probably aren't paying directly for Windows. If you think about it from the iPhone model, you bought an iPhone or a PC and you use that thing for some number of years, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, you're going to get them on the other side. You know, like, what do we have that we could, you know, generate income from these guys every month? You know, the Microsoft side, those things are typically going to be productivity focused, right? So that's why you see things like OneDrive and Office 365. There might be some security management stuff that could be thrown in there. There might be some, like you said, Xbox services that could be thrown in there. That's going to be another big source of revenue for those guys. When gaming moves to the cloud, they're going to have a bigger potential to have more money each month from that audience who's interested in that. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting question.
I know for enterprise, obviously, it's an easier kind of assumption as to how that'll fall out and how that could happen. Oh, yeah.
It's already there.
It's already there. But yeah. for the consumer.
Right. It's a tricky one.
How do you do it? The other thing would be is to bundle this stuff, right? Where you have, you know, virtualization. If this is the future of computing, which I do think it is, I do think some sort of virtualization and cloud computing is the future of this. You pay X amount to Microsoft and now you have different stuff in the cloud. Everything is in the cloud. You just essentially need a chassis. You don't even need the engine anymore. Everything is handled somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter because you're able to do it here. And then maybe you have different access to different things. You know, I know that that's a crazy thing to think about, and it's so negative on the Microsoft side to have a subscription to Windows. Which is fascinating.
I don't think that's ever going to fly with consumers. But I think they have a rich possibility in gaming. I really think there's a big opportunity there, but the gaming market's humongous. And then the other half of it is, look, I mean, Microsoft is primarily. They could say otherwise. People could complain, but the model works, and the cloud services stuff is not just the future, it's the present of the company. It's big. And it's always going to be there. I think it's going to be fine. You know,
I think it's interesting with the where that it's going. But Microsoft is a services business. I mean, that's what they are. Everybody's IBM now.
Yeah, right.
But IBM was forced to become IBM. You know, they really...
So was Microsoft.
Microsoft is kind of, yeah. But Microsoft didn't make hardware. At the time, I think it's an interesting concept when you look at, you know, services and the way that this is going over. And we're going to see this a lot the next couple of years. We're going to see more and more of this. The fact that you could essentially run, you know, Google claims that you could run these games with no issues over the cloud.
So I need to get going. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, guys, go to our website gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere. Paul, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I know Paul has week, I believe we're back on Tuesday next week, correct?
Yeah, we should be fine next
week. Okay, we're going to be on Tuesday next week. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Oh, thank you. I got a nice coffee here. I'm going to be hanging out with you for a little bit after this and doing a Patreon for you guys and talking about, you know, my experience building the studio and everything. And it kind of ties into cloud computing and virtualization because this is essentially what we're trying to do with everything we're doing here. I want to kind of talk about how we're doing this, and you guys might find this interesting. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. I want to thank our sponsors. Also, if you enjoy the show, please support us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. It's what pays the bills. It's what continues allowing us to do this every single week. We've been doing it for 8 years, and we're continuing to do this for the foreseeable future because I left my job, and this is my job now. You go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund us as little as $1 per episode, and you get access to bonus content. Hey, Spencer, the puppy's here. All right, guys, that's it for this week. See you later.